All right, my next guest is a returning guest. He spent 15 years in the military, retired as a master sergeant, was in the 82nd Airborne, 7th Special Forces Group, Clay Jensen. How you doing, bro?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, Alan.
Oh, absolutely, man. You were a pleasure to have on before, and I can't wait to dive into what we're about to talk about. We've a lot of stuff that went on. You know, I've went through some things, you've went through some things, and what we're about to dive into is really needs to be addressed. It's a kind of a stigma that's going on. So without further ado, you know, kind of go into your background for people, the new listeners, and let them know a little bit about you, what happened in your military career, what led to what's going on today. Mm-hmm.
Well, I joined the Army when I was 18, like a lot of guys, and the training and preparing for war for about 3 years before 9/11 happened. And after 9/11, I was working. I was in the 82nd Airborne, and I was working with some other guys on Fort Bragg, training and kind of integrating. And 9/11 happened, and you know, I got to go over and be part of the response. Deployed again, and then I had 2 deployments to Iraq, including the invasion, and then 3 more to Afghanistan. So I had a lot of war, seen a lot, endured a lot, was wounded 3 times in action, and I was finally medically retired after a helicopter shoot down in 2007. So
yeah, and there's an article about that that's really mm-hmm. intriguing you sent me that where can people go to find that if they want to learn about it?
Well, the article was done by a friend of mine, Ryan Wempe, who owns Chummy Vet Apparel. I'm actually wearing one of his shirts right now, Willie P. Burns.
Awesome.
And yeah, so he does some highlights on what he calls extraordinarily ordinary veterans. Yeah, he does some small bios on them. Mine turned out to be longer, I think, just because I saw a lot of stuff, you know. I
you can go ahead and say shit, it's okay.
All right. You know, I was never the main player, but I was part of a lot of things, and witness to a lot of things, and major events, and yeah, it affected me. And you know, I definitely, over the years from 2001 until my last deployment in 2008, I definitely changed as a person. And didn't really notice everything until I retired. And that's when, you know, a lot of things really set in. Like I said, I was shot down in a helicopter in July of 07. And I spent nearly 3 years in the Defense and Veterans Brain Injury Center on Fort Bragg recovering from that.
Yeah. Tell a little bit about your background and what your job was when mm-hmm. they drop you off. You were kind of a one-man team. It was kind of pretty cool.
Yeah. So normally what would happen, I did signals intelligence. So my job was to intercept enemy communications, whether it's radios, phones, or other types of wireless communications. And then I would translate or analyze the hard data, the metadata on the phones and computers and radios and stuff. And then I would translate, you know, through a translator, or if I was in Latin America or Africa, then I could translate for myself. And then we'd geolocate or find their location based off of their emitter. And, you know, we'd guide assault forces or attack helicopters or bombers in on that location. And yeah, it was a really interesting job. I deployed twice with the 82nd Airborne when I was a younger soldier, once to Iraq, once to Afghanistan. And did my job in the conventional side of the house, advising infantry commanders and senior NCOs on enemy posture, what the enemy was talking about and where they were at. So, and then in special ops, I did more unilateral missions and also did that force protection piece with, you know, like a Special Forces Operational Detachment Alpha or an A-team. And I would go with them and advise them and, you know, hopefully help pinpoint targets for them. And then I worked with Joint Special Operations Command teams quite a bit as well, doing the same.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Another thing is, if you guys like the content, please like and subscribe. Always forget to do that. And yeah, if you like it, please subscribe. That's how it's going to grow, passing on with family and friends. And yeah, dude, your story is amazing. And, you know, I wanted you to share that with the new listeners, because you kind of touched on it on the last podcast. But for the new viewers, this guy's got an amazing story. And I couldn't imagine being out, you know, could you imagine being out there by yourself, you know, as a one-man team? I couldn't, because it kind of sucked being out there with all my whole team, you know, under fire. And I just couldn't imagine doing it. But when your helicopter was shot down, go to the extent of the injuries that happened to you. And that's what's going to lead into the further on in the podcast.
Right. I was conducting an aerial reconnaissance mission in the Nuristan province of Afghanistan. There's a lot of bad guys up there, and there's still a lot of bad guys up there. By Korangal Valley, Kamdesh, Gowardesh, some of these places, you know, where these battles have happened, where, you know, medals of honor have been awarded. So we were flying up there doing reconnaissance, looking to locate a high-value target who was in the area. And it was my team aboard a Black Hawk helicopter, and then we had two Apache gunships with us. So once we intercepted and then located them, the Apaches were going to engage. And they ended up getting us first and shot us down with two surface-to-air shoulder-fired missiles. And miraculously, all nine of us on board the Black Hawk survived the impact. As we were going down, the helicopter was, you know, one of the rotor blades was coming apart. Left engine was gone. It was on fire. Our own ammunition was cooking off. And the pilot, he landed upright on a small grassy patch next to a river. And all nine of us on board were injured to varying degrees. A lot of brain injuries from the explosion of the one warhead in the rear cabin. It blew up about a foot and a half above my head, punched through the door and up into the ceiling, hit the engine. And hit the ground, egressed the helicopter and immediately set up security. And after a short while, we were picked up by another rescue helicopter and flown back to a base in Array, which ended up being called Camp Bostic.
Mm-hmm.
Got there, got evaluated by medical team, x-rays, all kinds of evaluations. Because of the unit I was in and kind of what we do and what happened, the situation, what happened, definitely wasn't supposed to happen that way. So we were kind of whisked away and treated by our own people. And I ended up in total fracturing both elbows, fracturing my T6 vertebrae in my mid-back. I had a traumatic brain injury that we can talk about in a minute. I had ruptured my kidney, my right kidney. My field knife was on my belt and the handle jabbed up into my side. And I had a couple pieces of shrapnel in my leg from our own ammunition that was exploding. So,
damn. Yeah. Now, did y'all, once the helicopter crashed, were y'all in any enemy gunfire or what?
We didn't fall any, you know, they weren't coming down on top of us right away because, you know, they'd hit us and we're still moving forward. I think we moved probably about a kilometer and a half, 2 kilometers before we finally hit the ground. Maybe not even that long, to be honest. But I did have one fighting age male run at us and fired a shot in his direction, and he disappeared. So I guess that's how I'll put it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't see him again.
Yeah.
And luckily, we had a couple A-10 Warthog, you know, Air Force jets in the area, and the Apaches still. So they started lighting up the hill and engaging the targets as they were running towards us. So,
yeah,
I think they killed over 40 fighters. There's probably 150 or so that were in the valley that were going to they were going to come get us. So
yeah, try to overrun you.
Yeah.
Mm, damn. So after your crash, you came back to, would you get sent to Germany and then back to America?
No, it's a funny story. I was hurt. I knew I was hurt. I didn't know I was that injured. And so I basically lived off of oral painkillers and Toradol and other types of shots. And I pushed through for another month in the field, did a couple more ops on the ground, climbed a mountain.
Damn.
Yeah. And then I got home, and about a month after the crash, month and a half after the crash, and within 2 weeks of being at home, I started developing the symptoms of the brain injury, which ended up being the most severe injury. My elbows were, they were fractured, and my hands were numb, but I, for some reason, didn't really pay much attention to that until later. And I've got to tell you that a lot of my issues and the reason it took so long to diagnose and fix some of them was because I just, I tried to drive on. I didn't want to be a quote unquote shitbag and fall out when my buddies were still doing it. And, we'd all been banged up. You know, a lot of guys had caught rounds in the body armor or the helmet or the shoulder, and thigh through and through on a thigh. That guy stayed in country and kept rocking,
Yeah. Well, that's a big thing. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's a big thing. And even in the infantry is, you go to sick call, you're labeled a shit bag.
Right. Right.
And then once you're labeled,
if you can walk, you can fight. If you can walk, you can fight. And that's kind of how we look at things. So,
yeah. And once you're labeled a shit bag, you lose promotions. You lose a lot of shit. You get picked for the shittiest details. So a lot of people don't like going to sick call because of that reason. And there's people we call sick call rangers that go every fucking morning. And, that's what it is. So you see them guys and you're like, man, if I go to sick call, I'm going to get labeled that. So, yeah, right. It's a shitty deal.
And, for me, I guess what got me to where I was in the military was I just pushed myself harder than the average guy. And I don't think I'm special. And through a lot of therapy, I've kind of come to realize that there's a little bit of vulnerability and insecurity there that drove me trying to prove to myself that I was good enough, and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And that ego and that pride is honestly kind of what I'm talking about. You have to be able to say, hey, I have this issue, whether it's medical, mental health, social issue, some type of addiction. You have to admit it to yourself first before you can fix it.
Oh, 100% agreed. Yeah. So once you got out, what was the stuff you were really starting to deal with? Depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts?
When I got out, like I said, the brain injury symptoms started developing. The PTSD symptoms had been there. That was my sixth combat deployment at that point. And, I definitely changed, the anger, impulsiveness, being withdrawn, being, apathetic towards your loved ones and friends. Those things had set in, and everybody else that I worked with had the same problem. So I thought, hey, that's just war. That's just war. And at the time in the early and mid 2000s, the military, especially if you started showing issues, you did have your clearance suspended or pulled. You did automatically have medical retirement boards initiated on you. And, they sent you to the doctor, but nobody understood what was going on. So they didn't know how to treat it. And a lot of guys were labeled with higher symptoms of PTSD when a lot of these symptoms were from their brain injury. But they're comorbid. They mimic, they're the same symptom, but from a different cause. There's a lot of different things that can cause a fever. That doesn't mean you have a cold.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have depression, it could be from, PTSD or another type of depression, chemical imbalance. In my case, my brain was injured, and with brain injuries, oftentimes you see depression as one of the main symptoms, and impulsiveness, and, you know, things like that. But for me, the first things that set in were the cognitive issues. I started forgetting what I was doing while I was doing it, or forgot what I was talking about mid-sentence. Couldn't think of words. And then things like reading became difficult. I would look at a book, which I read books every day, and all of a sudden I don't understand the sentence, or I read a sentence and forget it and have to reread it before I can move on. Balance issues set in. I started falling. I would get up from the dinner table or get out of my car and turn and then just go down. If I closed my eyes in the shower while I was washing my hair, I would fall in the shower.
Damn.
And then my hands, I started dropping things, developed tremor. And at first they thought I had brain cancer. So I started getting tested for that. And then they're like, well, have you had a blow to the head? And I said, well, yeah, I was shot down in a helicopter a month ago. And they're like, oh, that's it. So they enrolled me in the brain injury center, and I started getting treatment every day for the next 2.5-3 years.
Damn.
So, yeah. And then, excuse me, then I moved home. I was medically retired in 2010, June 2010. We moved home back to where my then wife and I grew up. So, you know, our parents lived here. We had siblings that lived here, aunts and uncles. So, you know, our kids, we thought, you know, we'd be a lot better off, you know, living with family, and we'd have more support and things. You know, I was still injured. So I wasn't working. I wasn't able to work. Wasn't able to do a whole lot. So she needed help. So I went from getting the best care in the world between the doctors at USASOC, U.S. Army Special Operations Command, Womack Army Hospital, with the military's brain injury center being right there, and then up at UNC Chapel Hill at their brain injury center, and the Thrive program. And I went from that to moving back home to Iowa, where I have a less advanced VA hospital covering my portion of the state, and they just didn't know what to do with me.
Yeah.
You know, I come in with all of these issues at once, and it was overwhelming because they didn't have a case manager for me like I had when I was in the Army. They didn't have anybody to schedule my appointments or make sure my meds were getting ordered and tracked like I did while I was in the Army. The VA just doesn't have case managers like that, like a nurse case manager. And so I fell through the cracks. They changed a lot of my meds. The doctor, command psychiatrist at USASOC, a guy named Bob Forston, he was a colonel at the time. He had me on, and a lot of guys, on this certain combination or cocktail of meds that seemed to stabilize us really well. And one of them was for my depression and anxiety. I was on Concerta, which is like Adderall or Ritalin. And it's a methamphetamine stimulant. And for brain injuries, it seems to help with depression. Whereas with straight PTSD or clinical depression, you need an antidepressant med. But if you don't need an antidepressant and they put you on antidepressant or benzodiazepine that you don't need, then that can really mess your life up. And that's what happened to me.
Do you want to go into what was going on, or is it a little too personal?
No, I mean, that's why I'm here. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of social issues, getting along with people, getting along with my wife, having any type of motivation to even get out of bed or get off the couch or shower or do things like that. And so these symptoms, they started when I moved back home to Iowa. You know, the brain injury symptoms had really been under control. Other than, you know, some cognitive issues, headaches, some balance, stuff like that. But as far as like being a full functioning adult in American society, I was fine. And then, you know, I move home. I don't get the same level of care and treatment. And this is a lifelong rehab. You know, this isn't, we're going to help you for a year, get you better, and then you're going to go work at a corporation with your education. It's no, you're going to be doing this stuff every week for the rest of your life.
And yeah,
my, the just medical professionals in general where I'm at aren't set up to treat patients like me. You know, I retired from the Army, so I also have TRICARE, United Healthcare Insurance, and I have Medicare. And so when you go to the VA and they want to send you to specialty care or care in the community, they only look at places that are either in the VA system or in their community care network. And for years, and I just found this out, but for years, they just excluded everything that my insurance could pay for. And so they didn't even look at options that were available to me as a patient. And they're still not set up for that. And I've talked to the care in the community case managers and stuff at my VA and at the higher VA, at the VISN level. I talked to them, and they all agree that there needs to be case management. There needs to be someone that's versed in the different types of treatments and can schedule and coordinate your care. It shouldn't be left up to the veteran with the brain injury to figure out which doctors he needs and what they can do for him.
I agree 100%. That's just BS, you know what I mean?
Right. And the thing is, everybody within the system, including my doctor in the civilian world, they're all like, yeah, you need a case manager. I'm like, great, where do I get one? And nobody seems to know. So it's been a big problem of mine over the last decade, was just having a resource to help me manage all of these different treatments and things that I was doing, and then making sure I was getting appropriate care.
Well, I've noticed with a lot of veterans, they can't get the right care they need, and it snowballs to even other things. You know what I mean? Like now, right. They don't even want to be a part of the VA. They don't, you know, they think the VA is against them. And I've had a buddy kill himself over that kind of thing.
Yeah, me too. I've had two that were just fed up with waiting. Yeah, I guess we can get to that. Greta, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
Somebody just rang my door. Greta! Sorry.
It's all right, man.
We can edit that.
We all have families. We got dogs. We got stuff happens.
I feel like my mail person had a delivery I needed to. It's about mail carrier time.
Yeah.
So I, March 13th of this year, I hit my breaking point. It was a Sunday. I was sick of, just waiting and having no care and having no one to help me, with the resources that I needed. And so, I had also gotten a letter that I was being taken out of the VA Comprehensive Caregiver Program after 10 years because I no longer met the criteria. And I hadn't changed. And if anything, I had gotten worse over time. But they changed the program, opened it up to all areas of veterans, and basically just cut all the 9/11 guys out that weren't, 80 with dementia.
Yeah.
So, I got that letter and, got it on Friday, thought about it all weekend. And then Sunday night, I took my normal nighttime meds, sleeping pills. And once I started getting tired, I went out in my garage and turned my Jeep on and rolled the windows down. And I was just done. I couldn't shoot myself because my brain is going to Boston University when I die to get studied for chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So I know I couldn't mess that up.
Yeah.
And it was a moment, you wish you can take back, but at the same time, I feel like I had to do that to get to where I'm at right now. I feel like, that's something I had to hit rock bottom in that point of desperation where I was just willing to give up. And having survived that and having someone care enough to get involved, my outlook changed completely. And I called the VA White House hotline after I got out of the hospital for what happened from the carbon monoxide poisoning and stuff.
Let me backtrack just a second. Yeah. So when you rolled the windows down, you started your Jeep.
Yeah.
The garage doors closed. What got you out of that situation? Somebody call you and
yeah. So, my girlfriend of 2 years, I had already said goodnight to her probably around 9:30 PM. She had to get up for work Monday morning, real early, and she was at her apartment and, everything was fine. And then at about 12:30, you know, that night in the morning, however you want to look at it, she called and just out of the blue. And that's not a normal thing for her to call me that late. You know, she's got to get up at 6:30 in the morning. And, you know, I answer my phone and it's on Bluetooth and my Jeep's running. And she's like, "Where are you going?" I said, I'm not going anywhere. She's like, "Where are you at?" I said, "I'm at home." She's like, "But you're in the Jeep." And I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Well, where are you at?" And I said, "Well, I'm in the garage." And she stops and her demeanor changes completely. And she's like, "Clay, is the garage door open?" And I said, "No." And she started bawling and was like, why? And I said, I'm just done. I have developed some advanced symptoms that fall in line with chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, or the, you know, the disease you think about with NFL players, and repetitive concussions. And I've had hundreds of concussions, you know, blowing doors in Iraq, breaching in Iraq, you know, being in a, you know, with guys that are doing dynamic entries and, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a night, you're standing 6 feet away from a door charge and that'll ring your bell, you know? And, you know, having played sports growing up, soccer and wrestling, I had quite a few, moments that now I realize were concussions, but when you're a kid, you're like, "Oh, my head hurts," and you keep playing. So, being a paratrooper and having all of those, you know, hitting the ground and hitting your head a few times, and then IEDs, suicide bomber blown up 30 feet from me, and then the helicopter crash, the overpressure from the warheads exploding inside the cabin. So, I got to the point where, there are treatments out there that everybody talks about, especially in my circle and special operations kind of world. And I've been trying to get these treatments for over a year, and my psychiatrist at the VA has been working since last October on it, and she couldn't get anywhere. She would recommend or order these treatments that are in the VA, but she kept getting shot down. And nobody knew why. So I was just, you know, at the end of my rope. I thought, I can't get these treatments that everybody says are life-changing and have saved their relationships and their lives. And I got the letter saying I was no longer going to have someone to help me with my, you know, daily activities of living, if you will.
Yeah.
So I felt alone and I felt like nobody cared anymore. And I felt like I was never going to get better.
So. Yeah. And that's what you hear from a lot of guys, but like I told you before, you're never alone.
Right.
You can always call me and we've talked several times for a couple hours, man. We both dealt with some stuff. We don't ever want to see a buddy, take their lives and, you know, hopefully you're going to get the care that you need. That's why we're addressing this now. And I hope to God this one goes viral because there is a problem in the VA. You know what I mean? There's a big problem with, you know, different things that Tom Satterley, he talks about the Stella shot, and you were telling me about the ketamine.
Right.
Do the VAs even provide that?
Okay. So here's the deal with stellate ganglion block. Actually, a friend of ours, I know Tom knows him too, and a good buddy of mine, Chris Green, knows him, is a doctor named James Lynch, and he developed stellate ganglion block, and then he co-founded the Stellate Institute after he left the military. And he was at USASOC as one of the command doctors. And so he's been treating people at his clinics. And the VA does stellate ganglion block. in their pain clinics, but you can get them. There's a few different problems you can get it for, and chronic pain is one of those. So if you have chronic pain, I highly recommend it. But they don't do it for post-traumatic stress or traumatic brain injury, which is what all of my peers are getting it for, because that's what it was developed for in the military. It was developed in the Army by Dr. Lynch to treat guys for, you know, that fight or flight activation, you know, that quick to be angry at home. You know, we're not the kind of guys to freeze or flee, so we don't need that, you know, switch in our brain anymore. We're, you know, we hear gunfire, we're gonna shoot back.
Yeah.
But when you get home, it's counterproductive to be able to react like that so quickly in a violent manner. And you know, we need to address that. A lot of us need to address that impulsiveness and that 0 to 100 in 0 second type reaction that we seem to all have.
Yeah, I have it too, man. I mean, I go off on people at work all the time, and I'm like, afterwards, I'm like, why the hell did I do that? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, so the VA stopped doing stellate ganglion block for PTSD because they said the success rate and the period for which it is effective didn't meet the risk. And everybody I've talked to said that's just
what's the risk?
You know, you're getting an injection under fluoroscope or ultrasound into your brainstem, one on each side. So, you know, there's a risk involved with that medically. As far as negative side effects, you know, you're talking infection and things like that. Things that can go wrong with any injection like that. So,
yeah.
And it's pretty invasive, you know, getting a large needle pushed into, you know, your spinal cord. And having it, you know, part of it deadened, I'm sure that's pretty risky.
Yeah.
So for the study that the VA did that said it that, they're going off of one study, whereas there are multiple other studies that tout the benefits and the effectiveness. And then, you know, just tons of anecdotal evidence, you know, from people saying this changed my life or this worked. This is the only thing that's ever worked. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm set up to do that now. But the first thing that I did that was available to me along these lines was the psychedelic PTSD treatment. And I chose ketamine infusion, which is ketamine through an IV.
So. How long does that process take? Do you know?
Yeah. So I did 6 treatments over 3 weeks, 2 treatments a week. You go in, you have a nurse anesthetist, and at my clinic, there's a nurse practitioner that is on site, and then, you know, other nurses. So it's a medical clinic that you go into, and they start an IV drip of ketamine, which is an anesthesia. Some people call it the horse tranquilizer. Well, yeah, veterinarians use it on animals, but it's a people tranquilizer is what it is. And we actually use it in combat for gunshot wounds now instead of morphine because it's a dissociative and you can sit there and talk to somebody calmly while you're, you know, repairing a major injury or stabilizing a major injury. So, and it's used in a lot of surgeries, dental work, things like that. Pediatric dentistry, they use it now instead of nitrous oxide because it's safer. So, yeah, I went in. You get hooked up to an IV. You spend 40 minutes hooked up. And then after 40 minutes, they stop that drip. And then within 20 minutes or so, you're back in the real world and able to walk and function again. But there's 40 minutes where, you know, you're definitely under a psychedelic experience. And
is it a bad feeling or is it just,
no, for me, it was good. And that's not what fixes you. A lot of people get confused when they think of psilocybin or DMT or ketamine treatments is that, okay, it's the trip and you have an epiphany and you're better. And that's not it. The psychedelic experience is a side effect of the medicine that's actually working on your brain. So it's the psilocybin, ketamine, or DMT, ayahuasca, and it repairs your brain, synapses, neurons, other brain connections, and helps you make sense of things that your brain just can't figure out because it's, you know, not being fully used. So,
yeah,
for me, the psychedelic part was philosophical, you know, a lot of deep thinking, a lot of kind of realizing why some things are the way they are. And then obviously, you know, there were some visual effects, you know, things look different or your brain interprets things it sees differently. I could still talk and carry on a normal conversation. At the end, it gets kind of harder to talk. It's like being drunk. So you slur your words and things like that. But yeah, I wasn't, I didn't have a quote unquote bad trip. I was there, you know, I did 6 sessions for the initial battery of treatments. And after the second treatment of the first week, I went in Monday and I went in Friday. After my second treatment, I already felt completely different as a person.
Really?
Yeah. I went out to dinner with my brother and we went and hung out. The next morning, you know, I slept all night, woke up the next morning, kind of looked around and said, man, I should probably clean the living room. So I completely cleaned the living room. And then I kind of took my dog for a walk and stuff. And I came back, I was like, man, I should clean the bathrooms. So I cleaned all the bathrooms in my house. And, you know, just kind of went from there. I had my motivation back and I had some initiative to do the things that I needed to do and accomplish each day. And again, like I said, that was after only the second treatment. I go back in that following Monday and they're like, how are you feeling? I said, man, I feel like a different person. I'm, you know, basically what I just told you. And they said, oh, good. That's to be expected. And I was, I was blown away. I was like, that's normal. And they're like, yeah, that's what it's for. And I'm like, why isn't everybody doing this? And, you know, that's the question I have. Why isn't everybody doing something that will fix you in 3 weeks when, you know, you're willing to take 5 pills a day for 10 years?
I think a lot of guys don't even know about it. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. And, you know, I know Tom, another guy, Eric Miaris, who's retired E9 from the Army, or Sergeant Major, for those of you that don't know, and another special ops guy. And at least in our world, I mean, these things are being thrown out. Pretty much 3 psychedelic treatments, stellate ganglion block, and then testosterone leveling seem to be the 3 things that people are having the most success with as far as, the, you know, all the issues we face.
Yeah, I would have never known if Tom wouldn't have brought it up to me. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And it's funny because a few of these processes were developed within special operations to keep guys in. So they didn't have to retire us. They wanted to, you know, to fix us so we could keep working, you know, the time and money invested in to getting us to where we're at. And we're all senior guys, you know,
yeah.
There's not a lot of privates and young soldiers where we work. So, you know, you're talking seasoned guys and all of us with combat experience. So
they don't millions of dollars spent on you guys. Yeah. Millions. People don't understand that millions of dollars are being spent to train these guys to do what they do.
Yeah. So why not try and keep us in?
Yeah.
Because we're hard to replace. It takes years to build a replacement. And so yeah, these treatments were developed, you know, a few of them were developed within Special Operations Command. So you know, there's guys on active duty getting stellate ganglion block and doing psychedelic PTSD treatments so they can remain on active duty.
Wow.
Yeah. They didn't have it when I was in, so I got medically retired. You know, I was basically forced to retire. I didn't want to, but, you know, my body and brain weren't going to let me stand.
Yeah. What's crazy is when I was getting out in 07, there was really, you didn't even know what PTSD was.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I just knew I was like angry all the time. My mood swings. I didn't know what anxiety was, but I was feeling different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to get on a soapbox, but this is the stuff that I was dealing with. But I didn't want to say that because I was ashamed of it. I'm like, I don't want to be viewed as a different person. I'm trying to get into NASCAR. I don't want to show a weak sign of me. You know what I mean? But I was dealing with it hardcore, and I'm like, what is wrong with me? Mm-hmm. And so when people would ask me what's wrong with like my family, mostly I'm like, I'm fine.
Right.
I'm like, no, dude, you changed. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm the same guy. Just leave me the fuck alone. Period. You know? And that's not the right way to go about it.
Well, it's not going to fix anything.
No.
And if everybody tells you there's something wrong, you might want to consider thinking there may be. Even if you don't agree, you should at least go try and find out from the experts if there is something wrong with you.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. Nobody wants to hear that something's wrong with them, you know?
Well, that was my biggest problem, to be honest with you. I never, and I still don't identify as a disabled vet.
No.
You know, I'm 45. I can keep up with anybody. You know, mm-hmm. I'm still hiking and kayaking, riding bikes, lifting weights, working athletic training and CrossFit. Like I'm not disabled. I was injured severely a few times, but in all honesty, the only thing that slowed me down was my brain injury.
Yeah. Which is scary. That's a scary thing to deal with. You know?
Yeah. It's hard to admit, and it's hard to be vulnerable to the point you're willing to tell people you have a problem, because you're trying to be that strong man, that father, that you know, that person in the family that people rely on, because hey, you were in the Army, so you can do anything. And that's, you know, I ran into that a lot.
Yep. It's the alpha mentality, man.
Right. And I, you know, the thing is, people view you that way.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're trying to be tough and deny you have a problem. You know, you get more that way. You know,
a funny thing is, a guy used to tell me every morning, man, why you always look so mad? I'm like, I'm not mad. It's just my look. Right. He's like, no, dude, you look pissed every morning. And I wasn't pissed. It was just the way my look was. Mm-hmm. And I finally pull him aside. I'm like, dude, you saying this to me every day is really pissing me off. Right. You know what I mean? And now I look back and I'm like, why did I even go there? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it is my look. You know what I mean? I my eyes are squinted all half the time because I'm supposed to wear contacts and I don't. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So I got the squint eyed and it looks like I'm pissed. But I'm not. But people are like, man, this dude's pissed all the time. When really, I'm actually in a good mood that morning. But then they end up pissing me off by keep bringing that shit up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, no. Well, I'm one thing, man. I'm glad that you reached out to me. 100%, dude. And like I told you before, you pick up that phone. I don't give a damn what time it is at night, in the morning. I don't care if it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 6, 7 a.m. I don't give a damn. And I'll answer.
Yeah. I've been the same way. I'm still the same way. Yeah. I think one thing I probably should say is, and this was, you know, very evident to me when I went to the hospital after my attempt, and that was, you don't have to be in a mental health crisis to want to not be alive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be manic. You don't have to be in a psychotic episode or disassociated or be severely depressed. You just have to be done living. And, you know, I've been in multiple situations where, you know, life and death were a decision for me. Do I go around that corner that's getting lit up? You know, do I pull my head back a little bit and seek cover? Do I enter that house that gives me a bad feeling? Do I, you know, all of these different things. And, you know, having been blown up and injured and wounded to the point where I bled to death in Iraq, I have a different view on that. I think a lot of us do. And that's not a good thing. And especially with a brain injury, you have the suicidality, which is, it's much more than an ideation, you know. It's getting pissed and then killing yourself, without even thinking about it, you know, just being like, I'm done, and there you go.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a place to be in life. And if you survive it, I have a completely different outlook on my recovery and what I can do and what I need to do to, be productive and be good for my family.
Absolutely. That they're the number one, man, no matter what, when them thoughts come in your head, think of your kids, your, family, dude, cause they're going to be there before anybody, what I'm saying? But I would like to tell you, man, if you're ever down this way, which I know you spend a lot of time at North Carolina, but if you're ever down this way, I want to take you to that welcome home place. Cause it has saved a lot of guys' lives, man. It is a coffee shop. It's Richard's Coffee Shop. And they sponsor the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing place. I was just there yesterday. And all it is a place, it's a living museum. So they have different stuff from each war. I mean, there's uniforms to stuff that's priceless in there. Mm-hmm. That people, families have donated when their loved ones passed away from World War II, Korea, Vietnam. I mean, just on down the line. And I'll tell you, man, a lot of times when I walk in, it feels like the world falls off my shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that relaxing. And the first thing they tell you is welcome home.
Right.
And all they do is they serve some coffee and everybody sits at tables and talks and gets to know each other. And I kind of want to start one where I live here in the Raleigh Wake Forest area,
mm-hmm.
because that's what veterans want. They want to be around that other veteran. They want to, a lot of them feel like they lose that sense of purpose, that bond, that camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
And they search for that, and it's hard to find it in other places, and I think having this kind of coffee shop will bring guys together, and there's guys that will tell you their story in there. This place saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
They're there every day, every morning, just drink a cup of coffee and see each other.
That's been my biggest issue, socially, which definitely affects my mental health and my attitude and the way I carry myself. And I probably look mad every morning when I go somewhere, because I miss my friends. I miss people that understand me. I miss people that I understand. I miss people that will do anything to do something right. It will do anything to help someone else. I just don't have people like that around me anymore. I look around disappointed in most of the people I see. And that's not a good thing. But it's just the way it is. And like you said, I could definitely use a place where, you walk in and you feel like home.
Dude, it's amazing, man. I'm not just saying because they sponsor my podcast. Mm-hmm. I found this place on accident, and I used to go every morning before I go to practice or whatever and have a cup of coffee. And I'm like, guys, I got to go. And I'm telling you, the place is amazing, dude. I brought a buddy there the other day, and he's like, he don't talk. You know what I mean? And he was like, dude, this place is awesome. And Bobby that I had on last week, I'm trying to get him to come. He said he wants to come. So, dude, I'm telling you, if you're ever in North Carolina, we'll take a drive up there. And another thing is, remember I told you about hunting? I do the hunt camp thing.
You're more Ohio.
Yes, dude, you need to come to that.
I'd love to.
Dude, yeah. I'm telling you, I said I'm not trying to get off on a rant. I set a countdown every year. Mm-hmm. And I look at that every day and I'm like, damn, and I'm kind of making my life go by a little bit quicker, but that hunt camp, mm-hmm. I've never been suicidal, but I think it's helping me a lot. Dude, I look forward to that so much that
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are like, gee, Jesus Christ, you're just going hunting. I'm like, but that's something I look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps me going.
So, yeah.
The more people, the better, man. We build our camp from the ground up, and I'd love to. And that's another thing. I'm about to start a webpage. I want to, it's all going to be donations, but I want to take guys on guided hunts, camping, kayaking, just all over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just get them out and get them doing things. And that's what it's about, man. A lot of guys just sit at home and they're in their head the whole time.
Yeah. I mentioned that, I do a lot of hiking, kayaking, ride my bike. We've got some good trails here in Iowa. We're pretty much covered by bike trails. For me, nature, I said this in the last podcast, but for me, nature has really been my anchor and what where I find peace and where I can be absolutely mindful. You know, I can sit and watch a butterfly float around and not think about anything else.
Yep.
You know, and look at a sunset and just be in awe.
It's the little things, man.
Absolutely. And, you know, for me, being in nature has been the key. Because I don't have other people to hang out with. You know, I talk to people on the phone, talk to my buddies on Signal or whatever. But, you know, as far as sitting around just BSing, I don't have that around here. So I've had to find another outlet to where I can find kind of that feeling of belonging.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you do got some good news coming out. You know, I don't know if you want to share it on here, but you bought some equipment and you're going to be doing something on your, you know, and that's amazing what you're about to do. If you want to share it on here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've been posting on, the social media platform LinkedIn for about a year now. And I've had, some really good responses. Had a lot of people want to connect and follow me. And then I had a post in October that had 750,000 views and tens of thousands of likes and whatnot. And the direct messages I got from that, or the comments on the post, were all, you know, very encouraging as far as to keep writing, or, you know, start an actual blog or a podcast. And I, you know, through talking with some other people, yourself included, and a few other podcast hosts, I think that's the way I'm going. So I've purchased all the studio equipment. I've actually got it set up here in my dining room, testing it out, but I'm going to move that, building a studio in my basement. My plan is to bring on people like us from, you know, the military that went through, you know, some pretty serious medical issues and have had to be their own advocate and find their own treatment, fight for their treatment. And then bringing on the medical experts and practitioners and therapists that provide these types of care, so they can explain in depth what, you know, what it is, how it works, who it applies for, things like that. 'Cause it seems that in the veteran world, everything that I've done that has been productive or actually helped in my recovery, I learned about through the grapevine from other vets. Hey, this worked for me. Hey, this is working for me. Here's how you get it. And 99% of the time, it's through a nonprofit organization.
Yep.
It's not the VA. It's not your medical doctor that you use TRICARE and you know, your health insurance to go to. It's a group of dedicated people who are funded by donors that want to treat you with hyperbaric oxygen therapy for a month in Charlotte, like I did. You know, that strikes me as odd because my hospital and clinic here in my hometown has two HBOT chambers, but I can't get them because FDA label for them is pretty much cancer, chemo recovery, surgery recovery, wound recovery, things like that. But it's known through research and anecdotally that hyperbaric oxygen therapy does wonders for brain injuries. And it did for me. You know, I did it for a month. And the progress I made in that month was incredible. But you still can't get it for PTSD and TBI, which strikes me as odd. So,
yeah.
And then, you know, you have ketamine clinics and psychedelic PTSD clinics that will treat people that are combat disabled for free. Stellate ganglion block, there's ways to get that. And people will go in and say, hey, I have PTSD. Can I get stellate ganglion block? And their psychiatrist will say, no, the VA doesn't do it for PTSD. What they won't tell you is, oh, you also have chronic pain. You come in here every day for the last 10 years at a 7. You can get it for chronic pain. They just don't tell you that. I finally figured that out, found that out. I was told that by other practitioners, by the pain clinic. Oh, yeah, you qualify completely for chronic pain. And I'm like, well, it doesn't matter how I qualify. I need it.
Yeah. And,
So yeah, everything I've gotten has been a struggle. And it's been through the grapevine that I found out about it. You know, these fireside chats, these late night phone calls with somebody because you're struggling. Yeah. And they tell you, man, you really got to try this. It helped me out. And you're like, okay. And you're writing down the name of a nonprofit that you can apply and get the treatment that you've been trying to get for 3 years from your quote unquote medical professionals.
Yeah.
Whether it's the VA or outside.
And
it's especially hard for, you know, I'm not trying to sound elitist, but it's especially hard for special operations guys. There's a condition, if you will, called operator syndrome. And it's been researched, studied, and then there's medical journal papers written on it at the National Institute of Health. And it's really a constellation of injuries and issues. PTSD is one of them. Traumatic brain injury is one of them. Orthopedic issues is one of them. Psychosocial difficulties is one of them. Addiction is one of them. Sleep issues, appetite, testosterone levels. So these are things that under survey of thousands and thousands and thousands of special operators out of 12 nations that were surveyed, 85% of us have all the symptoms. The other 15% have almost or at least half of all the symptoms. So 100% of us are of these thousands of guys that were surveyed, including myself from over 12 countries, are suffering from at least half of these symptoms. And then the rest have all of them. And this is something that I've been trying to raise awareness about. And it's Tom Satterley, Miaris, a lot of guys. And it was studied and the paper was coordinated, written by a guy named Dr. B. Christopher Free, and it's F-R-U-E-H. And yeah, it's something that nobody knows about because there's not many of us. We go to the VA and they ask you who you are and you either don't tell them or you do tell them and they think you're being grandiose or just lying. So
yeah,
you know, if I have a doctor ask me what I did in the military, I just say, I was in the Army. I was a sergeant, you know, and he's like, oh, okay. Because if I go in depth, you know, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, I know where you're going with it. Yeah, it's insanity.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think your podcast is going to be great, man. I'm glad you're starting that. And I think it will help you with other things as well. You know what I mean? Like I said, my podcast, and you're going to start at ground zero, man. You can only go up from there. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, I truly enjoy mine. I don't care what anybody thinks. You know what I mean? I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep spreading the word about PTSD, suicidal thoughts. You know, it's the 22 a day it's a real thing. And
yeah,
if you do the math, so, you know, a lot of people don't know. So if you do this 30 days, 22 times 30, equals that's 660, right? Times 12, that's 7,920. How long did our war go on? Just ours. That was 20 times 20. That's 158,400 veterans or soldiers that had committed suicide. Now that's a problem.
That's a huge problem.
Huge problem. You know, and if somebody can watch this and learn something and get something out of it and be like, you know what, I don't want to kill myself, which has happened. I've had guys reach out to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about.
You know, for me, after my experience last month, and being able to articulate why and what would help, what steps needed to be taken so that I didn't feel like that again. I talked to quite a few people and my whole purpose and the reason behind it all is I don't want anybody else to get to the level I did because they can't get the care they need. And that's going to be my, emphasis is all of these different, generally alternative treatments, that really are helping people. And then to have experts on to explain what they are and how they help and in what areas they help. Because, you know, like I mentioned, the psychedelic PTSD treatment for me has helped with a certain set of symptoms and issues. And then stellate ganglion block is meant to address other types of issues and symptoms. And then, you know, other treatments treat other symptoms and issues. So there's no one fix everything method. And not every method works for everyone the same. So it's like a combination lock that has a different set of numbers for every person.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you know all of the numbers, you can throw them in there and eventually something's going to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want people to know that it's not as daunting as they think. There is a way forward, and honestly, being your own advocate and being earnest about recovery and not hiding it from yourself like you and I have. And like, I know, you know, even the great Tom Satterley, you know, he writes about, you know, denying and ignoring the issues and saying to yourself, I'm all right. Everybody else is fucked up.
Yep.
You know, and that's what we do. That's what we all do. And I just want to make sure people get all the information they need so that, you know, there are things out there for every issue you have, whether, you know, you were injured in the military or you were in a car wreck and got a brain injury and have PTSD or you had something else traumatic happen. A lot of people get lost because they think nothing's ever going to help.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there, experts and stuff in the field that, and other patients, long-term patients have found that really does help. So, and I'm one of those people. So if something can save my life, yeah, Something can save yours, you know.
100%. And when he talks about Tom Satterley, he was a 20-year Delta Force operator, and he runs him and Jen run the All Secure Foundation, which that is their flag. It's amazing. I will truly promote everything that they do. They're amazing people. They do amazing things for the operators, for veterans. I mean, they're just amazing people. Clay himself knows them, and they're just great people.
I knew who Tom was back in the day. I doubt he knows me because I was just a intel guy that was working in the same command task force overseas. Everybody knew him. But the thing is, you know, he's dedicated his life to make sure guys like us, other people, don't go through the same issues he did with his wife and in his relationships with his children and everybody else. And even to the point where he, you know, it's in his book and he talks about it all the time. He was in the act of being ready to commit suicide when, of all people, Jen Satterley called and wanted to make sure he was coming to the hotel bar to hang out. And that's what saved his life. And for me, it was my girlfriend calling me out of the blue at 12:30 in the morning and making sure I got the help I needed. She called the police. They came, threw me in their car, took me to the hospital. Cause I was, you know, I'd been in my garage for a few hours. So I was in bad shape.
Yeah. So. Well, brother, you always got me to call. Don't be hesitant. You know, we're here together. You know, just give me a call. You know, and there's other veterans, you know, I'll post my stuff on here. If you need to talk, call, hit me up on social media platforms. We'll talk. My phone's always open. I don't care what time it is. Mm-hmm. So, but,
absolutely.
I appreciate you coming on, sharing this, man. And I hope your podcast takes off and it's going to be a great one. I'm glad I got you back on. And like I said, if you want to come to hunt camp,
Come on. Yeah, I want to do that. I'll bring my gun and my camera and we'll have a good time.
Absolutely. So, but man, it's been a pleasure having you on again. I mean, there's no limit of how many times you can come on. You can come on whenever you want and share your story, you know, what's going on. And, you know, if you touch anybody's lives, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. If I can just get one person to not stand in their garage every night and convince themselves not to kill themselves because they haven't gotten any better after a decade, then that'll be the reason I do it.
Absolutely. Man, I appreciate you coming on. Your story's amazing, dude. And thanks again, man, for sharing it with everybody.
Thank you so much, Alan. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man.